Republic Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Eve Prang Plews. Eve is here every other Monday at 10 o'clock on 88.5 FM. And I see that we've already got questions coming in, but Eve is here. Hey, Eve, how are you?
I'm good.
So I've got a few things I want to ask you before we start, but I see that we've got three emails that have come in already from people that have questions. So that's good. But if you've got a question for Eve about health and nutrition, Eve is a licensed clinical nutritionist. If you've got a question for her, you can email us in the studio, our address, dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us the old-fashioned way at 813-239-9663.
No smoke signals?
You know, did people really use smoke signals?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Pony
Express.
Really? Yeah, I knew that. I always thought that, you know, how do you keep the smoke in a way that conveys anything? Because if the wind is blowing and wind is howling as it is out in the Southwest.
Oh, don't mess with our movies.
Okay,
you know,
right.
We want to keep the illusion.
All right.
Well, so, I have to start by giving a shout out and a thanks to an anonymous listener. You know, it always amazes me how smart our listeners are. And hopefully with these and the other public affairs shows, they keep getting smarter. But we had a lady that called my clinic after the show 2 weeks ago because I talked about how phosphoric acid is so bad for your bones. And phosphoric acid is in all the dark-colored colas. And she called up and said, Eve didn't say anything about phosphoric acid in salad dressing. And the reason I didn't say anything about phosphoric acid in salad dressing is because I never buy salad dressing that has phosphoric acid in it. I actually didn't know it was the case. And so I went back to the refrigerator in our lunchroom at the clinic. And everybody in the clinic brings their own stuff, you know, their own favorites. And there were 10 bottles of salad dressing in the door of the refrigerator at the clinic. And I read the label on every one of them. By golly, there was one of them that had phosphoric acid in it. So thanks to our very sharp listener who pointed that out. I did further research on the company that I have the bottle in my hand that has all the rest of the gnarly ingredients. And that's the reason I wouldn't buy it. I never buy salad dressing that's made with canola oil because canola is one of the genetically modified foods that can have glyphosate in it. But this one had soybean and or canola. So again, two genetically engineered foods, egg yolk, sugar, salt, buttermilk, distilled vinegar, and contains less than 1% of dried garlic, dried onion, phosphoric acid, monosodium glutamate, xanthan gum, a thickener, modified food starch, another thickener, natural and artificial flavors, spice, who the heck knows what that is, potassium sorbate, another stabilizer, calcium disodium EDTA, disodium phosphate, disodium inosinate, and disodium guanylate. You know, I wouldn't buy this without even paying any attention to the phosphoric acid. You know, the only thing that I'm interested, this was a ranch dressing. The only thing that I'm interested in is foods that occur in nature. So if I read a label and there's not foods that occur in nature as that list, if it's got all these preservatives and stabilizers and additives, you know, I don't even go there. So, thanks to that astute listener who tune me in to the fact that there could be phosphoric acid in salad dressing. And probably if you ate salad dressing every single solitary day, that like this junk here, you still would not get as much as you'd get in a six pack of dark colored soda in terms of total volume. So,
all right.
We're always always willing for our listeners to be smarter than we are.
So, everywhere you look, there's lists. So I got these lists that I want to talk to you about. And one list comes to us from the Food Network, which is the TV network. And they put up a list last week saying the 10 foods that food safety experts would avoid. They won't eat. And so I'll just read them real quickly. The 10 foods that they won't eat. This is when they're going out in public or that sort of thing. They won't go to buffets. They won't eat sliced lemons in restaurants. They won't eat raw sprouts of any kind. How about that? Undercooked ground meat, they will not eat. These are food safety experts, the foods that they avoid to becoming sick. They won't eat raw oysters. Okay. They won't eat food from bulk bins at grocery stores. And they won't eat sushi. They won't drink raw milk. They won't eat packaged lunch meats. And they won't eat at potlucks. And I'll just read what they say. Ellen Steinberg, who's a PhD, RD, LD, food safety specialist and president of the Georgia Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, says, while many people view potluck meals as a fun opportunity to enjoy a variety of foods prepared by others, I view them as a risky dining experience filled with hundreds of food safety mysteries. Was the food properly cooked, cooled, transported, and reheated? What about the health or hygiene of the person making it? Did little Johnny with norovirus help grandma make the cookies? Thanks for the invitation to the potluck, but I'll pass.
And I'm gonna have to ditto that. There were a couple of instances that really turned me off. We went to a friend's house one time for dinner, and she took one of those packaged lettuce mix.
Yeah.
Bags.
Say they were triple washed?
Right, and just bags? Opened it up and dumped it into the salad bowl. And I was like, yeah, because I would always wash it and, hand pick meticulously through it for the rotted leaves, if nothing else. And then one time in Sarasota, I was walking up one of the side streets downtown, and there was a restaurant there that their kitchen door faced the alley. And the angle that I was walking up was just such that I could look through that was a screen door. And there was a guy there, and he was placing chicken breasts on a great big tray, like 40 of them, that they were going to bake. And he placed all these chicken breasts, disappeared for about 10 seconds, obviously taking it and putting it in an oven, and then came back and proceeded to toss salad in a big bowl. And he could not have had enough time to have washed his hands between those two. And considering that somewhere above 50% of all the chicken in the United States is contaminated with salmonella bacteria, that pretty well freaked me out. And, I used the advice that I got before I went to Egypt. When I talked to several people who had made Egypt trips, because we hear about Montezuma's revenge for going to Mexico, but, what's true is you can get a funky bacteria anywhere. You don't have to even go out of the United States. And so Egypt was notorious for, people going over there and having a food poisoning. And somebody said, only eat food that's got steam coming off of it. At least that way, if there was bacteria on it, the bacteria is killed. Because unfortunately, in some of these less developed countries, human fecal material is used as fertilizer, as disgusting as that sounds. And so I did that. There were 18 of us on the trip to Egypt, and my roommate and I were the only two people on the trip who never got sick. So I wouldn't eat anything raw. I wouldn't eat a tomato. And, they say, well, you can go ahead and have something that has a thick skin on it. But, you put a knife through a cantaloupe that you haven't washed, you've just carried that bacteria into the flesh of the cantaloupe. So by eating things that were steamed. So you say, well, then buffets ought to be good because a lot of times they have steam coming off of them. But you have no idea what the age of that food is. You have no idea what has happened before. I mean, I've seen even in the salad bars in the health food restaurants, people go in there and stick their mitts directly into the bin because they want to pick out all the tomatoes or they want to take the peppers out or something like that. And so, that's enough reason. To me, buffets are designed by gastroenterologists.
Who want clients? Who want patients? So.
Well, when I found out years ago, there were five Checkers restaurants, they're burger joints. In the Manatee and Sarasota County area, and they were owned by a group of cardiologists. And I said, that's looking out for your future. As far as sliced lemons are concerned, again, I don't know who handled it. I don't know, who did it. But I have really less concern about that, frankly, because the acidity, the pH of the lemon is such that it's more often than not going to kill darn near anything that's on there. As far as raw sprouts are concerned, in the places that I go that put sprouts on the salad or will put sprouts on the sandwich, my only question is, do you do the sprouts here or do you buy the sprouts? And so we have a restaurant in Sarasota and they do the sprouts in the restaurant, and then I don't have any concern about it. As far as undercooked ground meat is concerned, I mean, ground meat all by itself, if there is one thing, you would have to have a weapon to make me eat. Pretty much I don't eat four-legged animals anyway, unless it's wild game. But if you knew what went on in these meatpacking houses in order to make hamburger. When you're making 25,000 pounds, you're grinding up a lot of cows. And the nature of the hygiene in that situation is pretty sketchy at best. You want to have ground meat, you want to have burgers, great. Go to the store, buy anything that's got the word loin or round in the name. Top loin, sirloin, you know, bottom round, eye round. Eye round being my favorite because it's the lowest in fat, lowest in saturated fat. And hand it to the people in the store and ask them to grind it for you. So, you know, go ahead and have your ground meat. But, you know, they're talking about undercooked ground meat. I'm just talking about ground meat in general is pretty funky. And when you hear about pink slime, and we won't get into pink slime in here, you know, what they feed the school children, obviously increasing their IQ. Ick is what I'd say. That's a technical scientific term. Raw oysters. My issue with raw oysters is the same issue that I have with other shellfish, mussels, scallops, clams. We don't really have any clean water to get it out of. Now, they're starting to do farm raise. When I was up at Chiefland the last time doing astronomy, I saw that they had farms there where they were raising oysters in these great big huge fish aquariums. And so, you know, if you knew that that was the source of it, I wouldn't hesitate. But, you know, the Apalachicola oyster business is all but collapsed, and I think it's spooky. As far as food from bulk bins are concerned, you don't know that somebody just didn't go to the restroom and didn't wash their hands, and they're, you know, oh, you're supposed to use the scoop, and you've never seen anybody that's dipped their hands in there and taken out a piece of candy or taken out a chip and popped it right in their mouth. You know, I think that stuff's pretty spooky. I'd be less concerned about things like dried beans overall, because they can't support the growth of bacteria, than I would as far as snacky crunchies and cereals and, again, candies and things like that. I'd be more concerned about those things. As far as sushi is concerned, I've been spooky about sushi since day one, simply because when I lived in Boulder, Colorado, somebody took me out and was absolutely going to convince me. I'd been a vegetarian for years, and I was just getting into, you know, eating any kind of flesh foods at all. And they absolutely convinced me the incredible benefit, you know, of getting the sushi. Now, you got to remember, I'm in Boulder, Colorado. I'm 1,000 miles from any coast at all. You know, the only thing that you could get there was mountain trout. Oh, well, this restaurant, you know, it's superior, and you know, the people that are there are all Asian and they've been trained and all like that. And they go, yeah. And so they bring out the sushi, and I look down at the sushi, and there's a fluke crawling through the sushi. Okay, that was it for me. And so, having seen in my practice individuals who've gotten parasitic exposure as a result of the fishes, no, I'm not going there. Raw milk, you know, I could do a whole show on raw milk. When people do the pitch on raw milk, they just frankly do not know what they're talking about in terms of the incredible hazards that there are for raw milk. So I agree, you know, maybe Louis Pasteur was wrong when he, you know, changed the way that milk is pasteurized and changed the way that it's digested as a result. But the circumstances are the risk for raw milk is so much greater than the benefit is overall. Packaged lunch meat, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Not only is it the risk of listeria, listeriosis can be a fatal disease. It can cause miscarriages. But the other thing about it is what they do is they take the turkey breast, even with the really good companies that don't have the additives and the antibiotics and blah, 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 they take the turkey breast and they throw it in a vat of salty, sugary water. And the turkey breast absorbs it. That's why lunch meat is kind of gooshy. You know, if you cook a turkey breast, it's dry. You know, you got to pour gravy on it or have cranberry sauce with it or something. But you test turkey lunch meat and it's gooshy. Well, the reason that it's gooshy is because then they can sell water, sugary, salty water for $6.99 a pound or whatever it is. I mean, it's like a no-brainer to cook a turkey breast. You know, stick a meat thermometer in it, put it in a 400-degree oven, immediately turn it down to 325 and cook it until it's 180-plus degrees inside. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And a whole turkey breast will cost you less money than one little packet. And I don't even want to get into all the exotic kinds of things. You know, this is one where, you know, Bismarck was right. The only thing that man should never witness is the making of laws and sausages. And well, lastly was the potlucks, and that's the same as a buffet as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Now, on the other side, on the upside, the Environmental Working Group, one of your favorite groups, they came out with its list of foods, foods that have the least pesticides in them. And I'll just read the list real quick. This list was published last week. It was on the CNN website. And people can see this list on their own. The top 15 cleanest fruits and vegetables for low pesticides: avocados, sweet corn, which they say only 2% of sweet corn is genetically modified.
Yeah, sweet corn isn't modified. The corn that's modified is the stuff they use for ethanol and the stuff they use for silage to feed the ant livestock.
So sweet corn is on there as one of the safest. Pineapples, cabbage, onions, frozen sweet peas, papayas, asparagus, and after asparagus, mango, eggplant, honeydew melon, kiwi, cantaloupe melon, cauliflower, broccoli, and that's it. So that's
with the exception of cauliflower, broccoli, and asparagus, they're all things that have thick skins. And so that I tell that to clients. I said, I don't care if you ever eat an organic pineapple or an organic mango, but I care a lot whether you're eating an organic strawberry or spinach, because those are the dirty dozen list. So again, EWG.org, you go to their landing page, and then on there it'll have a link that says Dirty Dozen Clean 15, and you can print a wallet card off of there that you can carry to the market with you that talks about the things that are, you know, less pesticide contamination. But that list is not made by Environmental Working Group. It's made by the United States Department of Agriculture, who tests 100,000 samples of food every year, and they wash them before they test them. And so that's why, you know, we're about to come into peach season. Yippee! Florida peaches are going to be ready in 2 weeks. My husband, thankfully, has gone out and put the Ziploc bags on many of the peaches on our Florida peach tree. So you take a Ziploc bag, you cut off a corner so that when it rains, like it did yesterday, yippee, the water gets in there, the water can drain out. But otherwise, you're going to look for recipes for squirrel and peach stew because they're going to get the peaches before you do.
We should say to our friends that you're joking when you say squirrel stew.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely am.
Okay, all right. So I interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. So. I think the animal rights people should speak up when I say something like that. But, you know, that's the joke that comes from my buddy Michael Clark, who's an old Florida cracker. And when I had the squirrels eating my mangoes, and I called Michael up and I said, Michael, what do I do about these damn squirrels taking my mangoes off? And he paused for a minute and he said, well, I got a recipe for squirrel and mango stew. And so, you know, that was how the joke started.
So, but it's a pretty good list. It's a place to start. But you would always eat organic. I mean, especially for fruits and vegetables that have thin skins, that's where you've got to be very
right,
careful.
Right, strawberries. They've got to look perfect. If a bug takes a bite out of them, you don't want to take a bite out of them. So they'll end up spraying them every third day.
Yeah.
You know, peaches, the same thing. A bug takes a bite, a bird takes a bite, a squirrel takes a bite. You don't want to take a bite out of it. So the more perfect they have to be when they get to the store, the more likely that they have pesticide residue. Last year, they found a peach that had 14 different pesticides on one peach. But, you know, this year, spinach went to number two on the list. And somebody's going out and they're having a spinach omelet or they're having a spinach salad and they think they're doing a good thing, because I endorse people eating spinach regularly. It's one of the absolute best sources of lutein that helps to prevent macular degeneration. But if you're going to eat it and it's loaded with pesticides, it's not going to be an advantage.
So we've got a bunch of email questions already. Eve, pray.
Well, in order for me to read the email questions, I'm going to need our stalwart helper, Frank, to come in here and do something to this computer, because this computer has done something to itself that I don't know how to fix.
All right. Well, Eve Frank Plews is here, and this is the Health and Nutrition Program on WMNF 88.5 FM. Now, let's see. This is Susan from Auburndale. She says, I was wondering if you can tell me the good and the bad of using organic ghee butter. G-H-E-E butter.
Ghee.
Ghee, right.
Ghee, okay. The Indian. Well, first off, I'm happy that you're using organic butter, period, because if you only bought one organic thing, buy organic butter. I know it's $5 or $7 a pound, depending on where you go, but organic, you know, where does the body anybody, any mammals store pesticides. They store it in their fat. So you're going to have higher contamination of pesticide in butter than any other thing. Ghee is simply where you've taken the butter, you've simmered it, and as a result of very, very lightly simmering it, you've first off evaporated any water that's left in there. And secondly, what you've done is you've gotten out the milk solids. So you take the pound of butter, you put it in a saucepan, you have to stay at the stove. You can't go run an errand and move the clothes out of the dryer. You got to stay right there. And so you melt the butter, and then as it gets up close to a simmer, you're going to hear this little popping sound, pop, 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 which is the water evaporating. And then after all the popping sound, I call it butter talking. After the butter has quit talking, then you're going to pour that melted butter into a ceramic bowl and let it reharden. Stick it in the fridge, leave it on the counter, doesn't matter, it's going to reharden. And then right on the top is going to be this layer of kind of white scum. Those are the milk proteins. And you can actually rinse it off in the sink. Just take that big glob of butter and rinse it off underwater. Or you could take paper towels and wipe that off. So people who have dairy allergies, there's not going to be any milk proteins in there. So you can use ghee as butter fat exclusively with no milk proteins in it. So even people with dairy allergies can use it. And ghee is stable for a really, really, really long time. And so, you know, in places like India where there isn't refrigeration available, that was one of the ways that you could keep your butter over a long period of time. So I see it as a very significant benefit.
Cheryl writes this, I'm always looking for ways other than medication to lower blood pressure. I'm 69 years old. My blood pressure was always good, generally about 120 over 60. It's gone up in the past couple of years and now is 160s to 170s over 80. I've lived a healthy lifestyle for my entire life, semi-vegetarian, most of it. I believe the stress of caregiving for my 90-year-old mother plays a significant role in this increase. Any suggestions about lowering blood pressure?
Well, first off, you absolutely need to lower your blood pressure very quickly because you're doing damage to your brain, you're doing damage to your heart, and you're doing damage to your blood vessels. So the idea of people going, oh, I don't want to take any meds, that is not always the smartest thing in the world to do. So I'm sorry for the stress that you have for taking care of mom, but the circumstances are you need to get that blood pressure down, and you need to get that blood pressure down this week. What will I use? The first thing that I'll use is magnesium and never the citrate or the oxide because those act as laxatives. I'm going to use magnesium glycinate or magnesium lysinate, starting out with 125 milligrams twice a day, maybe going up to as much as 500. I'm going to use coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10, at least 100 milligrams. There are other herbal compounds that we use to help to lower blood pressure and homeopathic remedies that we use to lower blood pressure. The newest hip thing that's out there is using beet concentrates to lower blood pressure. And there are some people I have to layer all of those things. But what's true is you want to get medicated this week, get that blood pressure down into a reasonable range. And once you get that blood pressure down into a reasonable range, you can work with these various holistic strategies, and in doing so, maintain that or get that blood pressure to drop more and then be able to reduce the amount of drug that you're using. But I'm not in disagreement that stress can be one of the things. But remember, if you've got something going on with your kidneys, that can cause high blood pressure. If you're too big of a sodium eater and you happen to be one of the people in the United States that's sodium sensitive, that can cause high blood pressure. The sclerotic plaque inside of an artery can cause high blood pressure. So I could have five different people and they all have the same 160 over 80 numbers, but they have five different reasons why their blood pressure is high. And so we don't address those all in with equivalency. But as far as I'm concerned, if you've got a BP that's showing up with 160 over 80, you need to be at the doctor this week and get medicated.
Doug writes this, Eve, I have a quick question regarding blood testing to test for TSH levels and verifying Synthroid medication dosage. Is it best to test early in the morning before taking the medication?
Oh, absolutely. Test before you take the meds.
Okay.
Yeah, you can skip the med just that morning because you're going to do a fasting test anyway.
Let's go to Chris in St. Petersburg. Chris, what's your question for Eve?
Well, I was wondering if you knew that in the salad dressing recipe or the ingredients that you mentioned disodium iodocyanate and disodium guanylate. that they indicate that MSG is present under a hidden name, if you know, you can Google MSG hidden name.
Oh, no, MSG was listed.
All right.
I listed it between the phosphoric acid and the xanthan gum. I've got the bottle right in front of me.
All right. Yeah, a lot of times it's not, I'm sorry I missed that, but a lot of times MSG is under a hidden name, but you can know that it's in there when it has disodium inosinate, which means it'll also have disodium guanylate.
Hey, thanks for that tip.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. There are a lot of different names for MSG. Why do you not want MSG in your diet?
Tell us, Chris.
Oh, well, it's a neurotoxin, excitotoxin. Some people, it causes headaches. For me, it causes me to pass out and then wake up with a throbbing headache. So I definitely avoid it.
That is definitely a good reason to avoid it.
Yeah. And I also wanted to ask her about, if you know about the FDA petition that was filed just over a year ago by the Real Food Consumer Coalition, realfoodcc.com, where they're trying to stop the persecution of the Amish, where they're conducting sting operations, and they're saying, well, people can just self-pasteurize their milk if they like, the goat milk or whatever. They can state that it's not for human consumption. Why are they going after a raw dairy when they don't go after things like oysters or steak tartare or eggs or nuts or peanut butter or meats or poultry?
Because of the U.S. Dairy Association.
And what do you mean?
Well, the people that have all the millions of cows and are selling millions of gallons of milk don't want any competition. They're absolutely wanting to convince you that, you know, raw milk is dangerous to the, you know, peace of the entire planet. So, you know, that's where the pushback would come from, is from the Dairy Association.
Yeah, they don't seem to want us to have healthy food, and I always feel an energy bolt or a jolt when I drink raw goat's milk right away. And, you know, for them to start out pasteurizing dairy, whether it's before they start culturing yogurt or just pasteurized milk, that's an immune challenge, and that's causing inflammation. And so I don't see, you know, they're taking something good and turning it into something that's harmful to us. And by the way,
Wait a minute, Chris. I got to push back here. I got to push back because you're saying you get an energy jolt from goat's milk, but you stay away from MSG because of the fact that it's an excitotoxin. So, you know, if goat milk is an excita-goat milk for you, then what you have to remember is that proteins that come from dairy products, specifically casein, there's five proteins in milk. Four of them are in whey, and the other one is in casein. Casein, as it breaks down and makes polypeptides, makes these little short chains of amino acids, those peptides act like morphine in the brain. They're called gluteomorphins and caseomorphins with dairy, gluteomorphins with gluten. And so the situation is, some people get a buzz from taking dairy products and from taking wheat because of these gluteomorphins and caseomorphins. So when somebody says they get an energy jolt from drinking goat's milk or any mammal milk, it doesn't matter whether it's possum milk or whale milk or dog milk or cow milk, don't make any difference, mammal milk, then we have to look at the fact that this individual may be in their digestive process, they make a caseomorphin, and we actually get addicted to these things. So when I have clients that come in, they go, I love milk. I drink a quarter, you know, I go through a half a gallon of milk by Wednesday. Then darn near every single one of them, if I test them for caseomorphins, they've got them. They don't realize that they are actually affecting the morphine or the opioid receptor sites in the brain. So you've got good chemistry background. Think about it.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
I want to mention that, I understand about the caseomorphines, but I know that goat milk has only A2 casein that does not produce inflammatory effects like cow's milk. So I know it's not as good as not drinking it at all, but, you know, I don't feel that same effect when I drink raw cow's milk. I don't know, you know, maybe I shouldn't, but it's so expensive. Maybe it's fortunate that I don't get a chance to buy it too often.
So, thanks for your call, Chris. I appreciate the provocation of the little gray cells.
Okay, so this email comes in from Frances. She says, my 60-year-old brother-in-law recently was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer. He had his right kidney removed and 7 cancerous lymph nodes. He's recovering well and will begin taking Sutent probably for 1 year. No other chemotherapy or radiation treatments have been recommended. He's received no guidance on dietary restrictions or how to improve his overall health. Can you please advise what supplements and dietary regime would be best for him to strengthen his immune system and improve his overall health? He's gradually changing his diet for the better, but cannot afford a lot of supplements, or he cannot afford strictly organic, writes Francis.
Well, again, you don't have to afford strictly organic if you take that EWG list and take that Dirty Dozen and just don't buy those things with pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. There are a lot of different kind of kidney cancers. There are actually renal cancers, and there are squamous cancers, and there are other types of kidney cancers. And so without knowing specifically what variety of kidney cancer he had, you know, I certainly couldn't make any recommendations about that. There are lots of different chemotherapies out there, but, you know, the first thing that I think of is hyperbaric treatment with oxygen, and that's expensive. You know, the second thing that I think about is the broccoli seed extract that came out of the research at Johns Hopkins University. Johns Hopkins and Dr. Paul Talalay are the one that discovered this compound in broccoli and ultimately in broccoli seeds that has done the most for stopping cancer in its tracks. Nobody can make a claim that they can cure cancer or prevent cancer, but there were 160 papers that were printed on these compounds that were in broccoli seed. So, you know, that definitely goes high on the list. The organic berries, and only the organic berries, contain a compound called salvestrols that have been shown to be effective against cancers. And so, you know, all of these things are important. The most important thing is that he only has one kidney now. And so because he only has one kidney, it becomes imperative for him to avoid things that are damaging to the kidney, like the soda pop with the phosphoric acid that I spoke of at the top of the show. When we look at these chemical compounds that can hurt the other kidney, even though we don't have a cancer in the other kidney, that one kidney has to take care of the cleaning of all those 6 quarts of blood that are running through your body, you know, every minute and running through that kidney. So, you know, those are the first things that I think of when we're talking about being protective.
Julie and Jerry both have questions about the keto diet. Julie says, what are your thoughts on the keto diet? And Jerry writes, what do you think about the keto diet where the body is starved of carbohydrates, includes very limited protein, and gives fats to eat for energy? My sister has been on the keto diet and has lost 30 pounds. She has tons of energy. Her cholesterol came down by 60 points, and her blood sugar is good. The diet seems completely counterintuitive. What do you think about that? That's Jerry from Englewood.
Well, first off, I think the keto diet is a very important selection in certain circumstances. You know, if somebody needs to lose 30 pounds, then a keto diet is a good way to do it. Essentially, what you're doing is you're changing the preferred fuel that the body is using from burning carbohydrates to burning fat. And you can only change that by eliminating the majority of the carbohydrates. So you're eating a diet that's about 75% fat. And you're right, it is counterintuitive. And it may not be long-term, except for people who have seizures. It's been able to literally stop seizures in their tracks. So I do believe that there's a benefit to it. But the thing that I've seen in my practice is that when you take whole categories of foods out, especially foods that people are familiar with, they will be vigilant for a period of time. And maybe your sister or sister-in-law, I don't remember, you know, was able to maintain that discipline. But I find a lot of people, they'll do the keto diet for 10 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden they go to the birthday party and they go face down in the chocolate cake and they switch back that burning ratio. And so they got to start over again. So, you know, I walk the razor's edge. There are some statements that are made that this is the diet that we evolved on, that we evolved on this diet that was 75% fat. I find that totally impossible from an anthropological point of view, because if you've ever eaten wild game meat, and I have eaten a good bit of wild game meat, it is incredibly lean. You know, unless you're shooting a wild hog out at Myakka Park, you're going to have incredibly lean meat. So where this idea came from that we got 75% of our calories from fat historically, I don't see any evidence for that from either an anthropological or a sociological situation. So, you know, I walk the razor's edge on this, but I do believe that the keto diet is beneficial for people who want to lose a lot of weight. I think it's beneficial for individuals who have certain neurological conditions. And I hope I answered your question.
Well, Eve Prang-Plues is here, right here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and she's answering your questions about health and nutrition. And here's an email that says, I've looked for but cannot find a stevia-sweetened flavored drink mix. Have you any leads?
I don't know of any drink mixes.
Yeah.
All right, so I mean, the easiest thing is to buy liquid stevia that's flavored. And there's about a dozen flavors out there, orange and lemon and root beer and cinnamon and, you know, toffee and all like that. And buy yourself one of those seltzer machines and, you know, make your own bubbly water and add the liquid stevia with flavors in it. The powdered stevia often has a cutting agent in it. It has dextrose or maltose or erythritol in with it. But the liquid stevias are often pure stevia with natural flavors in it. But, you know, I don't know anything about any drink mixes.
Let's go to Scott, who's in Largo. Scott, you're on WMNF with Eve Prang-Plues.
Good morning. Love
Good morning.
Your show.
Thank you, Scott.
Hey, I have a question, a milk question. The milk that you can buy that sits on the shelf in like a cardboard container.
UHT, ultra high temperature.
All right. Is there like, could you tell me the reason that they can do that?
It's ultra high temperature. They don't pasteurize it the same way that regular milk is pasteurized, which is flash heated. They use ultra high temperature, and you'll see that right on the box. It'll say UHT.
Right.
And so, again, the higher the temperature, the more the proteins agglutinate together. They jam together, and then they're harder to break apart. You know how if you take a soft piece of meat and you put it on a grill and you leave it too long, it turns leathery?
Right.
You know how you take a liquid egg and you put it in a fry pan and it gets harder and harder and harder the longer that it stays there?
Right.
So the more heat you add to a protein food, the more these proteins cross-link and therefore become harder to break down. It's way easier to digest a poached egg, a soft-boiled egg, a soft scrambled egg than it is to digest a hard-boiled egg.
So not as good as regular milk.
Not as good, not in my opinion. Now, if you live 16 miles from the closest store, and you want to put something in your pantry for the day that you run out and the snowstorm comes or the hurricane comes, and, you know, you've got one quart in your pantry, I'm not going to lose any sleep about that. You know, if you're using it while you're out hiking and camping, something like that. But otherwise, I would never choose it.
I got you. Well, thank you. That's exactly what I needed to know.
Okay, Scott. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
All right, Scott. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Lisa in Riverview. Lisa, what's your question for Eve?
Hi, Eve. Yes, I just tested positive for Lyme, and I've been struggling for years with adrenals, like, tanking out finally, a lot of other issues. But I'm just kind of overwhelmed with all the information I've been reading, and I'm just curious what your suggestions would be for to start.
Read Richard Horowitz's book.
Okay. Yeah,
you have. He has two. The first and the second, is it, will you ever feel better or how can I feel better?
Yes, I saw that. Awesome.
I served for 5 years on a medical science board of advisors with Dr. Horowitz. And and he is the genius of Lyme.
Okay.
And so, you know, I take his advice chapter and verse because he knows more about Lyme than anybody that I know. And so, you know, when somebody says they tested positive for Lyme, the first thing that I want to do is look to see whether they have any of the associated infections. What we're finding out today is the ticks are infected. The ticks are infected with other bacteria and even parasites. And there are tests that can be done that will look for these associated infections. Because if you only treat Lyme, if you've got Borrelia and Burgdorferi, if you've got, you know, these, they're called recurrent fevers, infections, then if you try to treat one and you don't treat the other, you're going to kind of chase your tail. And Dr. Horowitz talks about that in his book with these associated infections. So the idea of just using antibiotics to squash the Lyme sometimes is not enough or the most appropriate. There are a couple of new books that are out on the market about treating Lyme with botanicals, botanical antibiotics instead of pharmaceutical antibiotics. And so I know it's a lot of information to digest, but I would still use Richie Horowitz's stuff as the preeminent leader of the best information on Lyme.
Okay, and do you by any chance have any doctors in this area that you could refer me to?
No, but what you know, what I've said before is the Institute for Functional Medicine is, in my opinion, the best of the holistic-minded organizations in the world. Institute for Functional Medicine is out of Gig Harbor, Washington. And if you go up on their website and you go to find a practitioner, you can put in your zip code and a radius, you know, 25 or 100 miles. And what will come up are the people that have taken one of the two certifications that come from IFM. And you're talking to one of them. So the first certification is AFMCP, Applied Functional Medicine and Clinical Practice. Anybody who's gone through AFMCP is not a bozo. You know, you have to really strap in to just do that training. But after you've done that training, you qualify to be able to take IFMCP, which is Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner, a title that I hold. That is a four-year track, a four-year postgraduate track that you do to learn more about holistic approaches. What IFM is trying to do is raise the bar on holistic medicine, because there's doctors, they got a room free in their office and they put a massage therapist in there and they call themselves an integrative practitioner. But these are people that, if they've graduated from AFMCP, they qualify for this CP training. There's over 700 of us now. They're hoping for 2,000 by the year 2000. But at least you know that, I don't know that it's a Lyme specialist, but at least you know you're not dealing with a bozo.
Gotcha. Thank you so much.
Hey, good luck, Lisa.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Now, this email comes in from Gail in Bel Air. She says, regarding phosphoric acid in your salad dressing, she says, so the easy answer is to make your own. Lemon juice, mustard, salt, pepper, extra virgin olive oil, no icky stuff.
And whatever spices you like. You know, some people like the Greek palate, and so they're going to use oregano. And some people are going to like the Italian palate, and they're going to use, you know, more basil and garlic. And, you know, you can flavor it in any direction you want.
Gail adds, do you have a secret potion that you'd recommend for my fingernails? I'm getting ridges and my nails are splitting constantly.
Ridges in the nail.
I'm a 65-year-old woman who eats a healthy diet.
The ridges in the nail have to do with leaky gut. So if you've got parallel ridges in your nail, then something's going on with the lining of the bowel. So that's going to be especially true on the thumb and on the index finger, but it can happen on any finger and that will cause the splits. So what we have to do is we have to look at bowel health.
This email says, hi, Eve, I had to treat head lice or I had to treat head hair for lice with a chemical called RID made by the Bayer Company. Is there a particular detox method or follow-up things I should do after that? I'm concerned about the toxicity of this stuff, RID, writes Anonymous.
Well, it would have been a little more helpful if we would have been concerned about the toxicity at the time we used it. So we don't know what the time lag is here from the use. But go to the health food store, find a homeopathic drainer, drainage, homeopathic detoxifier, some word like that. That would be the place that I would start. And our good old buddy milk thistle. So using milk thistle on a daily basis, dandelion root, Oregon grape root, burdock root, those are all things that are especially beneficial for detoxing those kind of compounds.
All the things that help your liver.
That's right.
Yeah. This is the Health and Nutrition Program on WMNF 88.5 FM. And let's go to Hucom in Arcadia. Hucom, you're on MNF with Eve. What's your question? Hey, Hucom?
Yes, sir.
You're on WMNF, and you're on with Eve. What's your question?
I went to my doctor on Friday gone, and he says I got, what do you call it, low blood. I mean, anemic.
So you're anemic?
Yeah, what is...
And did the doctor test your iron levels or your ferritin levels?
I went to do some blood work on things, and the Fox reported the doctor, a specialist. I went there I got a rheumatoid arthritis in my hand. So he said, then I took some blood work and so forth on the Fox report thing. So when I went there Friday, he told my blood count is low.
Right. Well, there's three kinds of anemia. There's iron deficiency anemia, which is the most common. There's vitamin B12 anemia, and there's folate anemia. So if you show up on your hemoglobin, your hematocrit, and your red blood cells, RBC, hemoglobin, and hematocrit, if all three of those are low, then that is the indicator that you have anemia. That would tell the doctor to check your iron and your ferritin level, ferritin. Ferritin is your stored iron. Think of it like a pantry for your body where you keep extra iron in case you ever have a bleeding accident. So you don't want to give somebody iron unless you know they need iron.
Okay.
If your iron levels are normal, if your ferritin level is good, then you know that this is vitamin B12 and folate anemia.
Okay.
And again, for B12, we want methylcobalamin, not cyanocobalamin, as a supplement. And we don't want folic acid. We want folate. So you need to check your blood work and see whether it's got an iron level and a ferritin level on it,
okay,
because that will tell you whether you want to supplement with iron or supplement with B12 and folate.
Also, can it cure?
Yes, you can get rid of anemia.
Okay.
And anemia is not necessarily directly related to rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease, and for that reason, you need to have your vitamin D tested, because anybody who's got an AI or an autoimmune disease needs to have their vitamin D up around 65.
So that's good for the vitamin D, good for the arthritis?
It isn't good for the arthritis. What it does is it helps to slow the progression of the rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
But, you know, in my practice, I've never seen anybody who has RA or rheumatoid arthritis who doesn't have food sensitivities as well. The food sensitivities don't cause the RA, but, you know, we've talked about dairy products a lot. I've got a client of mine who lives out in Idaho, and she had RA, and we found she was incredibly sensitive to dairy products, and we took out the dairy products, and she was able to stop all the drugs that she was taking for the RA, and she's been my client now for 6 or 8 years, and her rheumatoid arthritis has not progressed. But if she has even a small amount of dairy products, even the, you know, the little containers of half and half that you get to put in your coffee, if she doesn't have that much, you know, which is barely a half a tablespoon, or she can't close her hands the next day.
I use sweet milk in my coffee.
You use what?
Sweet milk.
Well, that's fine. You may not be somebody that's sensitive to milk. You may not be somebody that's sensitive. All I'm saying is all the RA clients that I see in my practice, there are foods that make them worse. So if you have a good Monday and you have a good Tuesday and you have a lousy Wednesday, your hands are really hurting on Wednesday, look at what you ate on Tuesday.
Well, he gave me some, I'm taking some medication right now, and then, you know, it kind of helped me a little, but then a friend of mine told me to use a copper bracelet put on the hand, because he got the same problem.
Let him be your friend and do not take medical advice from him.
Okay.
Copper bracelets on your hand are a wonderful way to sell copper bracelets, but they don't do anything for your health.
Okay. Who come? Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Margaret writes, this recently I was diagnosed with LPR disease, laryngeal I'm sorry, laryngeal reflux. I am not pronouncing that right. How would you pronounce it?
I don't know. You're as good as I am.
No, go ahead. and I've always been conscious of eating a more lysine, alkaline than arginine diet, but apparently this condition has been
lysine, arginine doesn't have anything to do with pH and alkalinity. All That's right. a whole other story. Go ahead.
She says, apparently this condition has been brewing and suddenly really flared up. Changing my diet has been daunting. I've lost 5 pounds in the last month as nothing was appealing. All my staples for cooking are now out, i.e. garlic, onions, lemons, etc. This week, I acquired acid reflux diet books. Doctor has me on omeprazole, O-M-E-P-R-A-Z-O-L-E.
Yeah, it's a stomach acid suppressor.
Half hour before meals. I'm also taking a digestive enzyme with meals. And I'm wondering if there are any other recommendations you could give me. The thought of this disease is scary. Will it eventually go away?
Well, I don't know the answer to the last question, will it go away? But I would tell you that once again, I see these esophageal spasms and this reflux being connected to food sensitivities. Fully 50% of the people that I see in my practice that have gastroesophageal reflux disease or GERD or heartburn or, you know, this is more sophisticated than that because it involves a spasm. Are individuals that are sensitive to dairy products. They take out the dairy products, they don't have reflux anymore. You need to be using these stomach acid suppressors for a short period of time so that we make sure that that tissue heals where the tissue has been exposed to stomach acid. It needs to heal over that. And almost all the people that have these spasms going on in the larynx or in the esophagus are individuals who are low on magnesium. But anything more than that, I would have to know a little bit more about the case.
This email comes in from Thomas. Eve, in your experience, does Chanka Piedra actually work in dissolving kidney stones?
I don't use Chanka Piedra in my practice because very early in my practice, I had a client who used it and got the kidney stone lodged in the bile duct and it required emergency surgery. So there are ways that you can move a gallstone or reduce the volume of a gallstone, but you have to know what the ultrasound says in terms of the size of the gallstone. So under no circumstances will I endorse this because there's people out there who do this nonsense about drinking a cup of olive oil with lemon juice and sometimes cayenne and maple syrup and they call it a gallbladder flush. I've done them myself and I put screen in the toilet so that I could capture anything that came out. And what I captured were things that supposedly look like stones. And when we assayed them, we found out they were nothing but glomulated cholesterol. So, you know, I don't buy into the idea that you can do, quote, gallbladder flushes. And so that's the reason that I'm not going to endorse an herb that potentially could put somebody in an emergency room before the sun goes down.
Here's an email that says, my 75-year-old brother has peripheral neuropathy, burning feet, and he does not... He does not have diabetes, but he's been taking statins for years. After a plethora of Google searches, I can't find anything on how to ease this problem, burning feet. I understand there is no cure. It breaks my heart to know that he can't get out and walk. His doctors have no answers, and my brother tries to avoid unnecessary drugs. Any suggestions?
Absolutely. The combination that we've seen that works is, again, vitamin B12 in fairly high doses, 1,000 to 5,000 micrograms of methyl cobalamin, not cyanocobalamin. The use of alpha-lipoic acid taken first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. I use 600 milligrams. And that is done together with benfotiamine. Benfotiamine is fat-soluble vitamin B1. Vitamin B1 or thiamine is generally a water-soluble product. But the sheaths that are on these nerves are fats. And so the fat-soluble benfotiamine together with the alpha-lipoic and the B12 can make a very significant difference in about a third of the people that have neuropathy. It'll actually get rid of it. In about a third of the people, it keeps it at least from progressing and improves their pain overall. And in about a third of the people, it doesn't do a darn thing. So the nature of neuropathy is a very complicated issue, but this is one of the things that the FDA has allowed us to make a disease claim about, meaning we could make the disease claim that these ingredients together can benefit neuropathy.
Eva, we've only got about 40 seconds, so we're really out of time. We can't do justice to any more callers, but we did get to answer about 20 questions, the first 20 questions that came in. Not too bad. Thanks a lot for coming up.
Zoom, zoom, zoom with the time.
So quickly,
it just zoom, zoom, zoom.
So will we see
you? Oh, and I'm going to be speaking at the Gluten-Free Expo at Sarasota at the City Auditorium on Saturday afternoon. So anybody that's interested in gluten-free information, they're having a fabulous expo in Sarasota.
What time will you be speaking?
I'll be speaking at 3:30 on Saturday afternoon.
All right. Well, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
You will.
Eve Prang-Plues has been with us. She's a licensed clinical nutritionist, and she'll be back 2 weeks from today on a Monday at 10 a.m. right here on WMNF in Tampa. Now stay tuned for Radioactivity. First, we'll get the latest news from NPR. This is the community radio station WMNF.